Hey guys, I've got an excellent episode for you today, full of adventure and excitement. But before we get started, I wanted to do a quick shameless plug. If you enjoy my posts, I would love it if you signed up for my email list. You'll get my latest posts, any goodies I come up with, and no spam, seriously. To join, just fill out the form on the sidebar of this post, and I will love you forever. And now we'll hop over to the main event. Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining us on another audio edition of Ridewell. Today, we're talking to the lovely, talented, and daring Amanda Zito, a tattoo artist and illustrator from Portland, who undertook a nearly 4,000-mile trip around her home state of Montana and then celebrated with a campout called the Rocky Mountain Roll on her family's ranch. So good to have you, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
If you don't mind, let's start out with some background info. So, when did you get into motorcycles?
About 4 years ago, when I moved to Portland for art school from Montana.
Nice. So what kind of got you into riding?
Well, I was a big horse rider for most of my life. And when I moved to Portland, horses are a little bit expensive to keep here. So my horses had to stay in Montana, and I was having withdrawals pretty bad. Motorcycles seem like the next best step. So,
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before this, and you were telling me about your grandfather that had a bike, and he used to ride, or he does ride still.
My grandfather's had bikes his whole life. And I wasn't very close to him when I was younger, but I moved over and I was living with him in Portland while I was going to art school. And I have vague memories of being a small child, and he used to sit me on his lap. And he had this 1979 Suzuki Jizz 750, and he promised that bike to me when I was old enough to ride. So that was he got it when I decided I wanted to learn to ride. He got it all working for me so that I could learn on that bike after taking the safety course, of course.
Yes, very good thing. That's so awesome. That's so sweet. It's great to hear stories of people that have, family history and have encouragement from their family, because it something about bikes just kind of makes it really powerful thing to share with your family and people you care about. So that's really sweet.
Yes, absolutely. It's great. And it's just funny because I never really had a history of motorcycles until I moved to Portland, and was living with my grandpa. And over a span of period, I've learned so much about like my grandmother, who was with my grandfather for quite a while before they separated. And I learned that she used to do long distance endurance racing on motorcycles.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I mean, we're talking about the 50s, 60s, when that wasn't really a thing,
Yeah, especially for women.
Yes, exactly. And I was just like, wow, I would never have known that if I hadn't started writing.
That is so cool. So you're kind of following in her footsteps a little bit.
Yes.
Although I wouldn't call it racing necessarily. That's not required.
A little bit of slower pace than that.
That's really awesome. So why did you decide to take this voyage?
I was a combination of a lot of things, actually. I finished art school in 2014, and I didn't really have a way to celebrate it at the end. My father did get me a new motorcycle as like my graduation present, the 2005 Honda Shadow that I've done a lot of trips on. But I didn't really ha get to like go do anything because I was in the middle of my tattoo apprenticeship still. And my relationship with my mentor wasn't all that great. So it was just really stressful being at the shop. I loved tattooing, and every time I was tattooing, it was great. But just being around her was really stressful. So I kind of decided that I needed to give a present to myself
Definitely.
for sticking it out until the end.
That's really awesome. I mean, I think it's great that you took the time to do that because so few people, when they reach a time in their life where this could be a possibility, so few people actually make it happen. So that's really amazing that you did it. Yeah. So how many days did the entire trip take?
So it's like they're in my head, it's like split into two sections. I left from Portland and I went to Motos and Moab on the Honda Shadow, and then went to Montana to prep the Suzuki for the trip. My 1980 Suzuki GS 850, which was my first bike also. my personal first bike, not the one I learned to ride on.
Hey, the personal first bike is the one that means the most.
So, and then by the time I got to there, I'd been on the road for about 20 days already. And then the whole trip in Montana was about 34 days.
Wow.
So in total, I was on the road around 67 days, about 2.5 months.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. So in all, you did like how many miles?
6,700.
Wow. That is a trip. That's awesome. So tell me more about the bike you rode, the Suzuki.
The Suzuki, yes.
Yeah.
Her name is Lazarus. Partially because when I first bought her, she hadn't been ridden for about 3 months. So it took a little bit of encouragement to get her to start again. The man who owned it before, the guy I bought it from, was actually a preacher. And so the like motorcycle had Jesus fish on it, and I was just like, well, it has to be a biblical name, you know?
Yes.
And she came back to life for me, so she's Lazarus, and she's definitely come back to life for me multiple times since then.
Old bikes.
Yeah.
Yep. That's awesome. So how many miles did you guys do in a day? Roughly
on average, I did about 174 miles a day. There were definitely a couple days where I did less than that. And the last day of the trip actually was my longest day, and it was 264 miles.
Nice.
I ended up doing with my father, which was amazing.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So it sounds like this was really like, you know, kind of a soul enriching experience for you.
Absolutely. And it was just really good for me. I get really homesick all the time because I grew up on a ranch in Montana for the majority of my life. And I moved to Portland right after high school for art school. And it was a really big, like, culture shock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coming from a very rural community where I was related to half of the people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I get homesick all the time. And so I got in the habit of coming home every 3 months or so. But you know, couldn't come home more than that. And I was really ready to be in Montana for more than just a week.
Yeah. Well, I can't blame you. I mean, I saw some of the photos from your trip and it looks gorgeous. It looked amazing. Yeah.
It grows on people.
Yeah. So what was the best moment of your trip?
Oh, man, that's such a hard question.
Or several moments. I'll accept several.
Several? Okay, that's great. Ironically, the first, like, best moment of my trip was also the first worst moment. I officially broke down for the first time in Lewistown, Montana, which is the center of Montana. And up on top of this mountain... Because I went up the rough way off-road, of course. You know. Why would you go the easy way? I didn't even know the easy way existed. So, and I ended up on top of the mountain after dropping the bike 4 times. The first time because I was going up this really steep hill, and then I just lost it in this stack of wood. And then when I got to the top of the mountain, the wind was just hellacious that day.
Mm.
I don't know like what the miles per hours were, but I like would, if you, I walked to the edge of the road, where the drop off is, and I could stick my hands out in the wind, like, and lean into it, and the wind would hold me up.
Wow.
And so, yeah, the wind tipped me over literally 3 times.
Yikes.
And
then that caused...
Yeah, so by the end of that, between my slow top-end oil leak and dropping the bike 4 times, my bike ate 2.5 liters of oil. Yeah, and it only takes 3.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yikes. Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, so I had to walk for an hour to find somebody to take me into town to get a tow truck.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is when I met Martin, who... is one of the best things that happened to me on this trip. So he's like, oh yeah, we'll go get it. Because by the time I got down to Lewistown, it was 7 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
And, And he's like, well, I have to go on this gas trip first and you can come with me and then we'll go up and get the bike. And I'm like, yes, this is great. And we went on the gas call and everything. And I got to know a little bit about him. And he evidently it was a cowboy from Red Lodge and he's just doing the tow truck thing in Lewistown right now. by the time we finished the gas call, it was like 9 o'clock at night and it was getting dark. And we kind of agreed that it would probably be a bad idea to go back up the mountain in a rollback off-road.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I don't have enough money to stay in a hotel. And all my camping gear was still on the bike. And he's like, well, you can just stay at the tow truck shop. And I'm like, oh, really? And so I got to stay in the sleeper cab of one of the big rigs in the tow truck shop.
Nice.
Which... Adventure. It was like a dream come true for me because I love big rigs.
That's so awesome. I've always wondered what that must be like. What was it?
sleeper cabs and big rigs aren't like huge. You can't stand up all the way in them. You have to like be bent over and everything. But it has like a twin mattress, a little bit smaller than a twin mattress in the back cab of the semi truck. But I mean, it was awesome.
That's so cool. And that's so awesome that you met someone that was, you know, willing to help you out like that.
Absolutely. I mean, like he bought me breakfast the next day. Like we went up and got my bike at 8 o'clock in the morning and brought it back down. And I'm still like kudos to that guy for taking a roll back off road to the top of a mountain. Those are big trucks.
Yeah. Scary in of itself.
Yes. And when we got back down off the mountain, he called his friend to help me figure out why I did the bike so I wouldn't have to like go to a shop and like try to figure it out.
Yeah.
And by the time that we got the bike up and running again, it was too late for me to hit the road. And so he let me stay again. And he actually took me on another tow truck call. We uprighted a dump truck.
Wow.
And it was super incredible. I got to be like his little helper and he offered me a job. He was like, you could just stay and work here with me.
Well, there you go. That's so awesome. So that was your first breakdown. Yeah. How did you handle the other kinds of, you know, how often did you have trouble with the bike, I guess I should say first. And then, you know, how did you handle that? What was that like?
I mean, when it happens, it's like really emotionally overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
Partially just like being so far away from everything. And I'd never been to the eastern half of the state before, so I knew nobody. And it's most of the time those things happen after a really long day on the road. It's never like at the beginning of the day, of course.
Of course.
It's always like after a really long day and already like mentally exhausted. And like, so I cried a lot.
Of course. Understandable. I don't think anyone will blame you for that. Yeah. Breakdowns they take a toll.
Yeah. And I mean, like after the initial like crying, like when it first happens and it's kind of like, okay, you know, get your shit together and let's just deal with this. And so I didn't break down like a lot. Mm-hmm. The stator went out on the bike before I even left for the trip.
Yeah.
So we kind of got that out of the way, which, you know, I guess is a good thing.
The first resurrection.
Yes. I had like some throttle cable issues like around the third day, when I got to the northwestern corner of Montana, but that was easily fixed. And not really a big deal. And I'd been on the road for a week when the oil thing happened in Lewistown. Then 2 days later I broke down in Circle, Montana, and I had been having, power issues, for most of the trip actually. And I thought it had just because the bike had been sitting for a year before I even started the trip. So I thought that I would just like, you know, working some gunk out of the engine or something. But 3 miles outside of Circle, Montana, which is in the middle of nowhere, it is 46 miles from the closest actual city.
Oh.
And the population of that whole county is outnumbered 20-1 by livestock.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Middle of nowhere, for real.
Yeah. I lost power on the bike and I just stopped on the side of the road.
Oh, that sucks.
And I didn't really know what else, know what to do. I thought that maybe I had got bad gas or something. And I flagged down this old woman and she went into town to check and see if they had a tow truck or something to come get me. Because the wind was atrocious still. Like my big hurdle, like in the middle of this trip, was this ginormous windstorm that went through eastern Montana while I was going through eastern Montana.
Wow. That's not really, you know, something you really think about happening, but it's serious on a motorcycle.
Yes. Like the wind that like took me over when I was in Lewistown, I caught up to it in Fort Peck. And I lived through this hellacious rain and thunderstorm. Like for 4 hours, I was holding up my tent because the wind was so terrible.
Yeah. I saw the clip in your video.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
So that was that. And on the way down Big Sky Country Byway, which is the highway from Wolf Point to Circle, I was driving by all of these telephone poles, and there was almost 86 telephone poles that had been snapped in half because of that storm.
Oh, that's scary.
Yeah. And so, like, driving down this, like, really eerie byway, and, like, all these telephone poles are, like, ripped over. It looks like the end of the world. Like,
yeah. You're, like, one of the last people left over in an apocalypse. It's just you and your bike and your camping gear.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's impressive, though.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. The sheriff pulled up behind me after a little bit and was like, "Are you the motorcycle that, like, is broke down?" And I'm like, "Yes." And he's like, "Well, we don't really have a tow truck, but do you think a horse trailer would work?" And I'm like, "Absolutely, yes.
Anything that'll haul with two wheels."
Yes. And this guy, I just mind boggled because he went all the way back to his ranch, which was over 20 miles from where I was.
Oh, wow.
And got his truck and his horse trailer and come back and hauled me into town.
Oh.
And I mean, like that would not happen in Portland. There's no way.
No, definitely not. That's so awesome that, you know, you met so many people that were willing to help out.
I have, like, there's just, yeah, it's incredible. So I was in Circle for a total of 6 days.
So you got to know the town.
Oh, yeah. Everybody in that town knew who I was.
That crazy girl on a motorcycle.
I learned at least half of their names.
Wow.
And, well, because, like, every time I would go in somewhere to get something, they'd be like, "Oh, you're Amanda." And I'm like, "Yes, I am." And they're like, "You're the motorcyclist who broke down." And I'm like, "Yes."
Wow.
That
is a small town.
Yeah. that breakdown ended up actually being because of my pet cock.
Really?
Yeah. I pulled the whole bike apart in front of my hotel room for 2 days because nothing is open in Circle on the weekends. And I broke down on a Saturday.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So I had, like, the whole bike torn apart in front of my hotel room. Like, the carbs were out because I thought that I got bad gas or, like, if my jets were plugged or anything. And I put them back on twice just to double check that I didn't miss anything. And it still wouldn't, like, catch. And then the Ford dealership opened on Monday. And I met Josh, who came and picked me up in a trailer and took me to their shop. And we got there and he unloaded the bike and he's like, "You can wait out front." And I'm like, and I didn't move.
He's like, "No."
and he, like, started I went through the list of all the things that I had already done and checked on the bike. And he's like, "Oh, well, that just sounds like an electrical problem." And I'm like, "It's not the stator."
That's always the best.
Yeah. And, like, he was just impressed that I had my own tool roll. It was the most hilarious thing ever.
Well, yeah, you better if you're, you know, taking that bike out for so long by yourself. Like, what does he think you? Yeah.
Yeah, like the old man who, like, owned that shop, like, kept coming over and be like, "You should just hire her, Josh. Like, she clearly knows more than you do."
That's awesome.
And we eventually pulled the petcock off the bike to check it. And the guys at the shop thought that my diaphragm was messed up. And I'm looking at it, which is like the rubber piece inside the petcock. And I'm looking at it. I'm like, the diaphragm is like fine. And I'm just like looking at like the underside of the petcock because there's the diaphragm because there's a little piece of metal that goes across it. And I'm looking at like the petcock itself. And I'm like, I don't think that this tiny piece of metal is supposed to be in the output hole for the fuel. It turns out like the tiny piece of metal underneath the diaphragm had snapped off and had been floating around in my petcock. And that's why I kept like losing power for a little bit because it would plug up the hole and then like the pressure would release and it would like pop out again.
Oh.
And somewhere between Wolf Point and where I broke down, it just got jammed in there. It wouldn't come back out. So my carburetors weren't getting fuel at all.
Yeah. Well, that will do it. It's amazing with old bikes, you know, I mean any bike really, but especially with old bikes.
Yeah.
That just one teeny little thing can just, nope, shut it all down. We're
yeah,
done.
Exactly. It seemed like the stupidest thing in the whole world. We tried to jerry rig it a couple times and after getting my leg drenched in gasoline, I kind of like was like, okay, we're just going to order the part. There's no way we can just jerry rig this. So I was already in Circle for 3 days when we found out that the petcock was the problem. And then we had to wait another 3 days for the petcock to arrive.
Oh.
There were so many power people coming down to fix the power poles that the lady at the hotel had to kick me out.
Oh, really?
And I was like, well, can you guys just let me camp at the Ford place? And they're like, you're going to camp?
Yeah.
And they're like, no. We have this old, like, they had this old fifth wheel that somebody had traded in. And they're like, you could just stay in there. So they let me stay in the fifth wheel on the lot for the whole time that I was there. And they, like, let me drive around this beater car so that I wouldn't be stuck at the shop.
Oh, that's so nice of them.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. Yeah, well, you did camp most nights, didn't you?
Yes, I did. The only exceptions to my rules were Circle and a couple times. And when I got back to Western Montana, I hit some pretty terrible rainstorms again.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really have an option. I had to get a hotel room.
Yeah, which is too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. So yeah, tell me about, I know we talked about before and I've read the rules that you had set for this trip. Those were really interesting.
Yeah. I wanted to make it more than just like, I'm going to go on a motorcycle trip and, you know, do the thing. So to make it a little bit more interesting for myself, I made a couple rules. No GPS, paper maps only, no hotels. Which I did most of the trip.
Yeah. No, you did pretty well.
No chain restaurants. Partially just because fast food makes me sick, but also because I think it's really important to support local economy, like mom and pop shops and that kind of stuff. And then to avoid all major freeways.
Nice.
Period. And I did that one really well. I did not get on interstate the whole time I was on my trip.
Wow.
I, with the exception of my like Portland to Motos and Moab, because I wasn't really counting the rules for that. I made the rules for the Montana section.
That makes sense. Well, I mean, it's so hard to absorb the feel of a place or, you know, just in general when you're on the freeway and you just, you know, it's all asphalt and you're stopping at, you know, Motel eights, sixes. Wait, and fast food joints
and
motel six, super eight. Thank you. Gotta know your low budget hotels. So, if you don't mind me asking, what was your favorite restaurant that you found?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have to tell you
this would be good.
About the Dirty Shame Saloon.
The what?
The Dirty Shame.
Dirty
Saloon.
Shame. Fantastic.
This is like the bar in Yak, Montana, which is like the most like northwestern corner of Montana you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's a tiny, tiny town. Like their gas pump is still like the old style, like crank.
Oh my gosh.
And it's like just the Dirty Shame, and there's like a restaurant gift shop across the street, and that's the town.
That's awesome. So it's half of the town, basically.
Yes.
Dirty Shame is half of the town.
Yes. And also, like, right across the street from the Dirty Shame is a ranch, and mm-hmm. the ranch's name is No Shame.
Of course.
But, like, so this, like, bar restaurant has the best fries that I have ever had. They're like they're hand cut and they're thick and they grill them right there, and oh my god, they were so good.
Nice.
Like the burger was amazing too, but oh my god, I had dreams about those fries.
That's awesome. Well, you probably needed them to help you get through the wind and the rain.
Oh yes, for sure.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I always hold that you find the best food in a place and just those little hole-in-the-wall cafes, but absolutely. I don't think I'll ever be able to trump the Dirty Shame.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That's pretty incredible. So tell me a little bit more about how you planned this trip. You know, what did you do beforehand to prepare yourself?
I did a lot of research, like an embarrassing amount of research.
Hey, no, more time to do.
So I started off actually by gathering a list of ghost towns, because that is like my number one thing. I love ghost towns. People who know me personally know that I'm kind of obsessed with the 19th century and Old Westness kind of stuff. My thesis for art school was actually like an Old West comic book. So
awesome.
So I gathered a list of ghost towns, and I'm like marked them on my paper map. And for those of people who don't know, you can get Montana State Highway maps for free.
There you go.
You can go to like visit MT or whatever, the tourism website for Montana, and you can get them to send you a map. It's like a part of Montana's whole tourism budget.
Cool.
So I'm pretty sure I went through 12 of those maps. And so first I went through ghost towns and I marked where all of them were on the map. And then I went through and the Wikipedia page for all of the smallest towns in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like you meet like the most, like the people with the most character in tiny towns like that. And I marked like where there were towns that had fewer than 20 people.
Wow.
Places.
Do you even call those towns?
Yes, they're still technically towns. They recently passed a law in 2007 in Montana that in order to be a town, you have to have a post office and 1 year-round resident.
One. Wow.
Yeah.
One person in a post office.
Yes. It was supposed to like clear up the Montana state highway map, because there was a ton of towns that were listed on the highway map that aren't towns anymore. There aren't even really buildings there anymore. They were just like railroad stops.
Oh.
So to try to fix that, they like made that law. Anyway, getting off track a little bit.
No worries.
So ghost towns and small towns, and then I went through the Billings Gazette, did a couple of pieces on the, you know, best like small town eateries in Montana, and the Dirty Shame was on it, and I'm like, yes. The Dirty Shame, I have to go there.
That's so cool.
And I tried to hit as many of the scenic byways that were on the state highway map as possible.
Nice. Yeah.
And there's only a couple of places where I rerouted my trip so that I could hit state parks, like Medicine Rocks, which is in like the farthest like eastern half of the state you could get, but is the most underrated state park in my opinion. That place was amazing, mm-hmm. and there was like nobody there.
Of course, and everyone in the best places. That's really cool. So you had a whole route planned beforehand.
Yeah, I started planning the trip about a year ago.
Wow. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah, it was the thing that got me through the last half of my apprenticeship, basically, was being That's able awesome. To like obsess about my trip while I was at work.
Yeah, totally. That's really cool. So did you do any sort of like writing training before the trip? I mean, you mentioned that you went off road a couple of times. So.
Yeah. I wish I had done more off-road training. Yeah. I started doing off-road stuff on my Honda Shadow, actually. Which is definitely not a bike that...
not really.
Yeah, you should go off-road with. I went home a couple of times with the Shadow, and I love going up in the mountains, so I just ended up taking the Shadow. And, I mean, like, the main thing is to just go slow, you know? Like, don't be a speed demon, like, when you're going off-road, especially, like, when you're... For the first time, and you're not, like... You don't really know the way that the dirt affects your tires and all of that. You know, dual sport tires help a lot.
Yes.
But I just had street tires on the Shadow, and I still did a lot of things that I probably shouldn't have. mainly it's just like, you know, being really comfortable with yourself, and the way that you ride already, before you attempt like, dirt, but also just going slow and taking corners really easy, and, you know, just like going at your own pace, not worrying about anybody else.
Mm-hmm, definitely. What kind of gear did you bring with you?
Oh, yes, this is my favorite.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about this.
Well, first we have to start with my luggage, because that was, like, the best thing that happened to me before this trip happened. I met Kira and Justin, who run the social media for Wolfman Luggage and Butler Maps.
Nice.
And they, you know, were super excited about my trip, and I was just like really excited to meet them. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, have you thought about sponsorship? And I'm like, well, I'm not like doing it for charity or anything, and I'm not famous or anything. And they're like, you should get sponsorship. So like through them, like we worked together, and I made this proposal, and Wolfman Luggage ended up sponsoring me.
Sweet.
For the whole trip. And oh my god, I was so excited when I got the news that they were going to sponsor me. Like, I was in a doctor's office because my boyfriend was sick, and like I stood up and screamed and was like jumping up and down, like so excited, and like looked around, everybody's like staring at me.
Hey, no shame.
So they ended up giving me the whole Skyline series set. So I got the saddle bags and the duffel bag and the tank bag. And I have to say, the tank bag is like my favorite thing of all time.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Like, it has a bunch of little pockets, and the pocket system on the inside is fantastic. I love those bags.
Sweet.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I bet that helped a lot as far as like getting everything on the bike.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, like, they were really, it was great because, I put these bags on 3 different motorcycles already.
Nice.
Like, because they started on the Shadow, and I like, went the whole trip, and because they fit perfectly on the Shadow, which is hard because it has the dual exhaust on one side. And then I put them on the Suzuki, and they just look great on like that vintage bike, which isn't the case with a lot of luggage nowadays.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
They're all, like, very adventure-y. They don't really fit the vintage so much.
But... Yeah.
Yeah, but these were functional and pretty.
Yes, exactly. And I got a new bike at the end of my trip. My grandpa decided that the Suzuki was too dangerous for me to be doing the things that I did. And I got a 2016 Honda CB500X.
Yes, I saw that. It was awesome. How do you like it?
It's different.
Yeah. It's a new bike.
New bike. I've never had anything brand new like that, like, ever. Yeah. And I was telling my brother, I'm like, the throttle is super touchy. And he's like, you mean responsive? Mm-hmm.
The brakes are so hard. You mean they work?
Yes.
Yep, I've been there.
But yeah, so those are my favorite bags. Like, they fit on everything, which was fantastic. And then as far as other gear goes, my helmet was an Icon Airframe Pro, which I repainted.
Of course.
Yeah. huge thank you to Icon for, like, also sponsoring me. They sent me that helmet, which I was in desperate need of before I left. Yeah, I was still wearing a built helmet that I had for 2.5 years, so...
Okay, yeah, it's getting time. It's
time. A little bit overdue. And I had the Icon, the Stealth gloves for my regular gloves, and then I had a pair of built waterproof gloves, just, like, the generic.
Yeah.
I had motorcycle pants and my jacket were both Tourmaster. And my jacket is amazing. I love my jacket so much. I highly encourage people, like, if you're, like, thinking about a touring jacket, to do the Touramaster Transition Series jackets. Mm-hmm. Mine is Series 2. But there are so many pockets on that, like, coat.
It's important.
Yeah, exactly. Pockets,
yeah, storage is important. So yeah. It's, like, it has, like, waterproof lining. It has, like, you know, like, sprouts.
Yeah, that was the great thing about, like, the both the pants and that jacket is that, like, mm-hmm. you have, like, this quilted lining on the inside, like, mm-hmm. to keep you super warm because it's, like, a three-season jacket.
Yeah.
And you can also zip that out, and the jacket has a ton of vents. So, like, airflow, it was really great. I did end up taking a rain jacket just so I wouldn't get soaked through. I have gone through rainstorms in that jacket, and it's really great. But if it's, like, pouring down, you're going to get wet.
When you can't control the weather out on the trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything you wish you had brought that you hadn't, that you didn't bring?
I definitely have a lot of stuff that I wish I hadn't taken.
Oh, like, really? Like, well, there you take. Go. Yeah, that weren't really useful.
Yes. I guess.
Like, what kind of stuff?
I guess it's like that's a dual thing. I wish mm-hmm. that I had taken my big, heavy, like, army, like, sleeping bag. I have, like, this big, like, army surplus, like, sleeping bag that is, like, super thick and comfy, and I'm pretty sure it's, like, a negative 20 bag.
Wow, yeah.
And I love that sleeping bag so much, but it's also super big and bulky. And so it basically takes up a whole duffel bag by itself.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's a lot.
So I was like, well, I'm trying to, like, you know, get, like, make sure that I can have enough space for the stuff that I'm going to get while I'm on the trip, and also not look like I'm overpacking. So instead of taking that sleeping bag, I took a lightweight, a compressible sleeping bag, which was only like a 40 degree bag. And I took a sleeping bag liner to, like, a fleece sleeping bag liner. And I'm like, this will be enough.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up, like, freezing my ass off.
Never
for most of my trip. Yeah.
Sleep. I learned that the hard way. Sleeping is the one area you don't compromise.
Yes, exactly. And I ended up getting my grandmother's Pendleton blanket when I got to Montana. I was like, this is, like, not okay, because I froze my ass off in the Wasatch National Forest. And I'm like, this is not okay. And so I ended up taking the Pendleton blanket, which took up its own duffel bag anyway.
Yeah, so you,
like,
might as well.
I could have just took the giant army duffel, like, army sleeping bag and been fine.
Yeah.
That is, like, one of my biggest regrets.
Yeah. Oh. Well, you know, all things considered, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're about coming to the end, but before we finish up, what advice would you have for writers who would like to make a trip like this of their own?
Save up, like, so make a budget, and whatever you think the trip is going to cost you, save twice that.
That's good advice.
For real. That was, like, one of my biggest hurdles. I had to pay for the tow truck in Lewistown out of pocket. It was like $187. And in total, my little detour and circle was like $230. More than, you know, what I thought I was going to be spending for this trip. And since I was like, oh, I'm going to camp the whole time, I didn't really have a budget for hotels. So my amazing grandmother had to, like, come to my rescue. When I hit all those rainstorms on, like, the western half of the state, she paid for the hotels for me. I don't know what I would have done if she hadn't been there.
Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for talking with me. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I have one more little tangent story that I think is scary to go through, because it was also, like, one of the most trying things that happened to me. So when I got back to the western half of the state, between White Sulphur Springs and Helena, there's this range called the Big Belt Mountains. And I wanted to go to a ghost town that I thought was there called Diamond City. And so I went over this Forest Service road. And about 5 minutes into the mountains, it started pouring. And I'm talking about, like, buckets.
Oh, no.
And I'm like lucky because I put dual sport tires on the Suzuki. So it wasn't too bad, but it was also just terrifying the amount of rain and water that was on the road. A dirt road that was becoming mud. And so I rode in the rain for about 3 hours. And like by that point, like my gloves were like just drenched through. There's like puddles in my boots and my like basically everything is wet except for my torso because I had the rain jacket.
Yay.
And that's when I came to my first like real obstacle, or at least to me, it was like my first real obstacle of the trip, which was this ginormous puddle, which had to have been about like 14 feet across. And when I walked straight through it to check how deep it was up to my calf.
Ooh, yeah.
And I walked back to my bike and just freaking out, like, oh my God, there's like, I can't go back because like I had already like done a couple of hill climbs in the mud and I knew that if I went back, I would just like beef it. Like there's no way I could have gone back. And I like stared at that puddle for like 20 minutes in the rain. And like I walked through it several times until I found a section like the closest to where all the water was letting into the road, where it was only, you know, 2 inches above my ankle.
Okay.
So like, I walked back to my bike and checked that the water wasn't going to be higher than my exhaust pipe like 4 times. Cause I was just like so terrified I was going to like take water into my engine.
Yeah, no.
And so I took everything valuable off the bike.
Cool.
And I like psyched myself up. I did my first water crossing. And like the feeling of like doing that was amazing. And I put everything on the bike, back on the bike. And I kept going. I did 2 more water crossings before I got out of that mountain range.
Oh, wow.
You made it
through them all.
Yeah, I made it through them all. Like my boots were wet. It took 2 days for them to dry. But
oh my gosh,
that is like one of like my most, I guess that's like most serendipitous like thing. Just because like it was really difficult, but now I know that I can do that. And telling that story to some people who ride dual sport or dirt specifically, were like, I wouldn't have done that on a street bike.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. That's the best thing is like after you've done it all, you know, you're just like, yes, okay.
I can do this.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. It has been a pleasure talking with you. I'll be sure to put links to things like the Rocky Mountain Roll and your website and your Instagram if people want to go check it out. I think, you're putting together a video of stuff from this trip, right?
Yeah,
I saw a little sneak peek one.
Yeah, so I did. It's really cool. I think I'm going to do episodes just because there's a lot of footage. So I'm going to do episodes. That's kind of a work in progress. So
very cool. Well, if people want to, you know, follow along with that, I'm sure they can follow you on Instagram and check out your website.
Yes, absolutely. And there's, I'm pretty sure there's a link to my YouTube channel on my website.
Oh, awesome. So. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Amanda. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Well, friends, that's it for today. I hope you enjoyed hearing about Amanda's trip. If you've been on an awesome motorcycle trip, I'd love to hear about it in the comments below. Or maybe if you haven't, I'd love to hear where you'd like to go. I'm always on the hunt for awesome riding locations. And of course, if you haven't joined my email list yet, it is super easy. Just fill out the form in the sidebar and you'll never miss a post. That's all for me. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Keep the rubber side down.